The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, go to kuci.org. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. Good morning, everybody. This is Katrina Kirkaby, and I'm here with Tina Spindler, and this is This Month in the Garden, September.
Hey, Katrina. How are you?
I am great. How are you doing, Tina?
I'm good. I'm excited for September. It's actually one of my favorite months in the garden.
Mine, too.
Because it's a new beginning, you know? It's the beginning of our cool season, and I'm usually pretty sick of my garden and the hot weather by the end of August.
Yeah, by the end of August, everything's looking kind of worn in my garden. How about yours?
Yeah, a little, you know, the vegetable garden is overgrown and full of powdery mildew or tomato diseases, and half of the flower garden and perennial garden is looking straggly. The roses have got diseases, you know, it's just like, I want to do a big cleanup and start over.
Well, good thing it's September because it's time to do that.
It is. It is. And should we start with the flower and the pretty part of the garden first?
We should start with the flower and pretty point. And I have to tell you, every time we say flower, Tina smiles.
I get so excited, especially because if you've listened to our show, you know I'm kind of bulb crazy. And that's what time of year it is. In September, it's the time to start planning what bulbs you're going to want to add to your garden this fall so that you have some amazingly beautiful blooms in late winter and spring here in California.
You know, Tina, one of the things I really like about you is you know how to plan ahead. And a lot of us don't think about spring gardens until spring, but this is something you could do now. And it's like a present in the springtime.
It is. And the fun thing, if you plant the right kind of bulbs, and I'll talk about which ones are my favorite, is that it's the gift that keeps on giving. So even though I plant, you know, some new bulbs every year, I always in the spring am completely surprised and amazed at the bulbs that pop up in the places I forgot I planted them in previous years. So it really is kind of a fun experience. Or also say you've dug up a bed and you've kind of spread some, unintentionally dug up some freesias, you know, and the little bulbs just kind of scatter hither and yon. And so then you end up with these nice surprises all over your yard, which is also really fun.
And you know, it's also nice. We get busy in the springtime a lot. And you do it now, and it's just, you don't have to do it later.
Yeah, it is. It's really nice, especially like last winter, we had a pretty rainy, you know, winter that you know, lasted through February and maybe even a little into March. And so with wet ground, I was kind of delayed in, you know, getting in some of my flowers. But I didn't really notice it in the garden because I had planted so many bulbs in the fall, and I had some returning from previous years, so I had this gorgeous spring flower garden anyway, regardless of the fact that I didn't get to plant a lot of new annuals.
Maybe we should talk about what kind of, there's bulbs you can plant here, there's bulbs planting other places in the country. What do you like to plant here in Southern California?
Well, the ones I like to plant here, mostly because I'm lazy, are the ones that naturalize. And so,
could you tell our audience what naturalize means?
Sure. Naturalize means that you plant them and they come back year after year. It means that they enjoy their life cycle and they go through a full life cycle and repeat it year after year, as opposed to, you know, if you plant like marigolds, say, in the summertime, that's an annual plant. They bloom, they grow. By the time cold weather comes, they're done. Well, when you plant bulbs that naturalize, as I was mentioning before, they'll come back year after year, and so you don't have to always replant them. So that's kind of an extra bang for the buck from a purchase standpoint and from a labor standpoint, too.
Well, it's also nice because some of our lives are so busy, and then if we could plant it once and not have to deal with it again and just have it keep coming back. What are some of your favorites that you like to plant?
So the ones that I like to plant here in Southern California are the daffodils and narcissus. They're part of the same family. Freesias, which is a South African originating bulb. And any bulbs that you read about that come from South Africa do fabulously here because they have the same Mediterranean climate. So I like to do freesias, also like to do Dutch iris. And the Dutch iris naturalize to some degree, but they sometimes don't come back every year. They may come back for 2, maybe 3 years and then kind of peter out. So I typically plant more Dutch iris every year. But the freesias will come back year after year after year. And sometimes when I'm digging up a flower bed, as I said, you know, the bulbs will just kind of break apart and scatter hither and yon. And all of a sudden I'll have freesias in no place that I personally ever planted freesias, but they just kind of tumbled there and ended up with a new little spot of freesias. So,
you know, I've seen the freesias in your yard, and I thought you just had such a decorative talent, because there's a little patch here and there's a little patch here between things, and it's just lovely coming up.
No, mostly Mother Nature and, you know, messiness on my part. Just kind of letting them fall where they may.
Gardening made easy.
Right. But the other bulbs that you can plant that I do plant because I love them, and when I use the term bulbs, I'm using it very broadly. A bulb is a term that relates to a very specific structure, and it's an onion type of structure, which the Dutch iris and the narcissus and daffodils are true bulbs. But other things that we call bulbs are things like anemones, ranunculus. We call those bulbs, but they're actually technically corms. But we plant them at the same time of year, and I do love to plant those, even though they don't naturalize as easily as the other ones. Occasionally, I'll get one that will pop up again the next year, but I just personally love the flowers. The ranunculus are my favorite flower.
Yes, you've been mentioning the ranunculus forever. They're beautiful, aren't they?
They are beautiful. They're a little more touchy to grow. I actually do start them often in six packs. They're super easy to start in six packs. You just fill up a six pack with any old potting mix, and you stick, you know, one of the corms or bulbs in each one, and let them sprout. And the reason that I do that is they're pretty susceptible to snail damage. And if I'm not religious about putting the snail bait out when they're very small, when they're only like an inch or so tall, the snails can decimate them. So I often like to grow them in the six packs till the greenery is about 3 inches tall. And the other reason I do that is that sometimes your flower beds, you don't quite have the room yet, you know, because maybe your summer flowers, your cosmos.
Transitioning over.
Yeah, you're transitioning. And so you don't quite have the heart to dig up an entire bed, right? Because then you'll be pulling out all the color that you have and then putting in the bulbs. And they're not going to bloom till early February. So you're going to be, you know, several months without any color, although I'm going to give you a solution for that. But that's the other reason I do like to start the ranunculus in the six packs, is when they get to be about 3 inches tall, they're a little more snail resistant. And
when you start those in the six pack, do you leave the six pack inside or outside?
Totally outside.
Outside. Yeah. So you water it when you water everything else?
You water it when you water everything else. I happen to have a greenhouse, so, you know, I do sometimes have flats of them in my greenhouse, but it's totally not necessary. You can just put them if you have a garden bench or a patio, but make sure it's someplace up high that the snails are not easily going to be getting to. And then I just water them. They actually, when you plant them in the ground, that's the other thing you have to watch out for ranunculus. They are susceptible to rot a little bit easier than the other true bulbs. And so the advice is, when you plant them, and you plant the ranunculus shallow, you only plant those about an inch deep, and the advice is to water them once and then watch your soil and not water them again until the soil dries out. So you don't want to, unlike seeds, you know, where you're watering the seeds every day to keep them, you know, damp so that they germinate, you don't want to do that with the ranunculus because they can be susceptible to rot. So
when you said to plant them one inch deep, do you mean to put the bulb in or the corm in and then cover it with one inch of soil,
exactly. Now, if you're going to plant any of the bulbs directly in the ground, you want to till the soil like you would for planting any new flower bed. And that is, you want to dig it, you know, about 8 inches deep, incorporate some organic compost amendment, soil amendment, add a fertilizer at the time that you're planting. You'll see the bags of Bulb Booster is kind of the brand name that you often see at the nurseries, where they'll have their displays of bulbs and they'll have these displays of what they call Bulb Booster. You don't have to get Bulb Booster. What that is it's a fertilizer that also has, I'll just refresh everybody's memory. There are three main nutrients in fertilizers, which are nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. And the nitrogen is what provides the nutrient for green growth, and the phosphorus for bloom, and the potassium for root growth and overall plant health. And you'll notice on the Bulb Booster that it's higher in the phosphorus, in the middle number of those three numbers. And the reason is you want big flowers, right? That's why we plant these bulbs. We want to have these, you know, great looking daffodils or iris. And you'll notice I didn't mention tulips, right? One reason I don't mention tulips is because they're not a good one to grow here in California. They're a little labor intensive. They need to have winter chill. So unless you buy them pre-chilled, you have to put them in your refrigerator. They're pretty expensive. You only get one flower per bulb. So for my money, it's a better deal to buy your tulips when they're in bloom at the florist, because I think it costs you about the same amount as buying the bulbs, and it's a lot less work to just buy them, you know, at Trader Joe's or a florist when they're in bloom. But if you're planting the rest of the bulbs we've been talking about, you want to prepare your bed if you're going to plant them directly in the ground, and you want to plant each bulb at a depth that is about twice what its diameter is. So for instance, if you have a freesia bulb, which is about, you know, 1 inch tall, you'll want to plant that about 2 inches deep. If you have the ranunculus corm, which is only about, you know, a half an inch to an inch, you want to plant that, you know, more shallow. But most of the bulbs, if you buy them in bags or you buy them loosely at a nursery, they'll have little tear-off sheets, you know, that tell you exactly how to plant that particular bulb and how deep it should be planted. The narcissus and daffodils, you know, those are big bulbs. They can be, you know, 3 inches tall or in diameter. So of course those you plant, you know, pretty deep. Yeah. But the other way that you can plant the big bulbs like the narcissus is there are bulb planters, and they kind of look like a cutout tin can that's attached, welded to a long handle. You know, it's radio. Here I am using my hands to try and describe what it is. But it's like a cylinder. It's like an empty cylinder mm-hmm. that's attached to a long handle, and it has a flat place that you can step your foot on it. And you step that on the soil, and it takes a core of soil out to a depth of about 5 to 6 inches. And when you want to plant the big bulbs like the narcissus, and they're so hardy, they're not super particular about the soil being all loose and nicely perfect. Dug and perfect. And so if I do this, you know, in some areas, because the narcissus will grow in partial shade. And so where I have shaded areas that are shaded by some trees where the soil is not easy to dig up a whole bed, right, because you've got some tree roots in the way, I like to use those bulb digger planter things to take out these cores of soil, and then you just drop a little fertilizer in each of those holes, cover it with a slight bit of soil, drop the bulb in, cover it back up, and then you've got some nice flower beds under your little shade areas too.
Voila, in the springtime yeah. you'll have a present.
Yeah, and but then the other thing, the last thing I want to say about bulbs, and then we'll move on, is that I mentioned that when you plant these bulbs, you got to have patience, right? You plant them in late September through October into early November, and then you're not going to see flowers until, you know, February-ish and March and into April. You'll see greenery, but you're not going to see the bloom. And so if you, like me, are a flower hog and you want to have something that's blooming
all the time,
you can interplant with things that are appropriate for that season, like pansies are a great cool season, or calendula, another cool season annual. What I do is I'll put the bulbs in and I won't cover them up, and I'll look, you know, where the bulbs are, and in between the bulbs, you know, I'll plant a plant that's going to flower. And then lo and behold, those bulbs will come right up through the flowers that are already blooming, and then
and they'll it's beautiful.
Bloom. Oh, it's gorgeous.
It's so beautiful. Well, one's blooming, the other one's coming up, and by the time the first one's fading, the next one's taking off, and the complementary in colors and in foliage is just, and it fills up your bed, and you have continuous bloom.
And the other thing that's good, particularly for the bulbs like the freesias, which tend to lean a bit, they don't stand up nice and straight like the daffodils and the Dutch iris do. And so I especially like to plant, I'll often plant snapdragons in between the freesias. So if you plant, say, pink snapdragons and white freesias, you know, those snapdragons are blooming for you for months and months and months, and then all of a sudden you have these beautiful, highly scented freesias in white. So now you have this pink and white flower bed that's going on come early February, and it's just so fun.
And everybody thinks you work so hard on it.
It takes a little effort at the beginning, but
all of a sudden that's coming up. It just adds to, you know, you think about the colors you're planting ahead of time and the palette that you're creating, and there in the spring, then you have it.
Yeah, and then the other thing you can do if you have kind of a more wild area and you're lazy, like I am, is I will maybe sprinkle just some alyssum seed, you know, a seed that's super easy to germinate. Alyssum or bachelor buttons are another one that's super easy to germinate. So you just sprinkle those seeds out over the bed where you have planted the bulbs, and then, you know, you'll get some additional color. And the other thing that's nice about having those additional plants is once the bulbs bloom, if you do want them to naturalize, you need to leave the foliage there to brown, because remember, the leaves are what's producing the food for the plant. So if you want that bulb to bloom the next year, you better let it produce some food. And to disguise that foliage as it's, you know, turning brown, it's great to have other flowers, you know, that are there kind of disguising that foliage. You can kind of tuck it behind your snapdragons or whatever you have planted.
Kind of hide it a little bit.
Yeah,
it's getting its nutrients. And great idea.
So anyway, enough about bulbs.
I'm looking forward to it, Tina. Every year your bulbs just look so pretty. I'm so glad we talked about this, because a lot of times we forget about it. And then in the springtime we go, oh, I wish I had that.
Yeah, and you do have to, they're only available in the stores, the retail nurseries, the big box stores. They often come in bags, you know, so you buy a bag of daffodils or a bag of Dutch iris. But some of the nurseries will have them in boxes where they're loose, so you can, you know, pick out the specific colors that you want, because sometimes the bags come in mixed colors. And personally, I like to have single colors because I like to pair them. Like I said, you know, the white freesias with the pink snapdragons, or, you know, the orange calendula with the dark blue Dutch iris. You know, you want to have these color combos that will be just stunning.
And what's really nice, what I've noticed when you do those color combos, you could see them from the distance.
Oh.
You know, it stands out, where if you put a lot of colors together, it kind of all fades together. And that's for a smaller yard, that's nice. But for larger yards, you want to be able to see it from a distance. So large patches of color seem to work really well.
And the other thing to remember, too, even in small yards, you can have things that are too busy. You can have things that there's too much going on, and your eye isn't as happy with that. Your eye's usually happier with swaths of color, or, you know, triangles of color. So when you're planning your fall color garden, your flower beds, do think about swaths of color, about repetition. So if you are going to plant, you know, pink snapdragons, say, maybe do, you know, a little 2-foot area, and then move a few feet down your yard and do another 2-foot area, and then do it across on the other side of the yard, so that your eye then, what happens is it travels, it's like, oh, pink, oh, more pink, oh, more pink. And it just makes, I don't know, it just somehow it gives you a more
comforting,
soothing, connected kind of feeling. And because my yard's pretty big, I have the advantage of changing colors, but I try to do it gradually, you know, and I'll have, here's the pinks, okay, now there's some whites, okay, now we're transitioning maybe into some yellows, But, you know, it's not all jumbled all together. We're trying to make it something that's continuous, and I'm repeating the white, you know, throughout the garden so that it kind of ties everything together.
You know, I like that about your garden because it flows from one color to the next, but you have a large garden. So for some of us who have smaller gardens, maybe we need to pick out what our favorite colors are and what goes well and do it instead of doing everything, just pick out your favorite and concentrate on that. What do you think about that?
Absolutely. And you can have a pretty big color palette. So for instance, you know, you can have pinks and purples and whites and a pale yellow. All of those go together. You know, they're not something that will. Now you probably don't want to throw an orange in there, and probably not a red unless you're going to do pinks and whites and reds. So just kind of think about it. And my sister taught me a great lesson. She's the artist in the family. And what she does when she goes to the nursery or one of the big box retailers is she gets a shopping cart and she picks the things that are in bloom and she starts arranging them in her cart like you would kind of a flower arrangement. And when she finds a color combination or even a texture combination or a height combination that she likes in her cart, then she says, okay, that would be good for this, you know, section of my garden. And I thought, you know, that's so much better than the way I used to shop, which was, you know, like a kid in a candy store. Oh, I have to have one of these, and then I have to have one of these, and then I have to have one of these. And before you know it, I've got this total hodgepodge.
Yeah, I can relate to that.
But let's talk a little bit more just about the other flowers that you might want to consider in your garden this time of year, because we are switching from the warm season to the cool season. And even though September can be really hot sometimes, it's not as intense because our days are getting shorter.
Days are shorter.
Yeah. So one of the things that is really fun to plant even at the very beginning of September, in fact, you should plant it the first week of September, if you love sweet peas and you want to have sweet peas by Christmas, you need to plant them the first week of September by seed. And the other key is you have to get the seed that says it's an early or a day neutral variety. And that means that it will bloom when the days are short. A lot of plants bloom when the days are a certain length, and sweet peas are one of them. And so if you want to have sweet peas by Christmas, you want to plant the seeds of early varieties the first week of September.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sweet peas at Christmas. How
yeah.
wonderful is that? Middle of wintertime, having sweet peas go off and the smell.
Put Ooh. Those in your bathroom when you're having company over during the holidays. Wouldn't that be cool? That
pick your colors.
Fills the scent of, you know, that scent fills a bathroom.
Oh.
Like crazy. You'll just want to hang out in the bathroom because it'll smell so good.
Okay, Tina.
The other thing with sweet peas is if you get the traditional tall varieties, you're going to need to have a trellis. So make sure you have a trellis for them to climb up. There are short varieties that only get about 2 feet tall. And those I actually like for pots, like tall pots, because they'll spill over the edge. So that's kind of fun. And I know you used to plant sweet peas in a fun way. Tell folks how you used to do it.
Well, I have this wall that has those paving stones kind of in it. And what I did is on the top of the wall, it's about 4 feet high, I planted sweet peas. So it's about a 40-foot length, and the sweet peas just cascade over, and it's just beautiful. And sometimes we get in our little ruts and we forget about thinking. Everybody thinks about sweet peas growing up, but I tell you, my sweet peas growing down and just lapping over, it just made a beautiful statement. So you will always look about where can we put things in our yard. And when I did the sweet peas that year, it was just, I did it for a whole bunch of years. And I really miss it. I've now turned that wall into a succulent wall. And I love my succulent wall because it's easy and it doesn't take a lot to maintain. But I sure miss my sweet peas there.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I want to find another place where I could do sweet peas. But I just want the listening audience to know that it doesn't necessarily have to grow. They don't have to grow up. They can also like lap over and
cascade.
Just fall and cascade. And it's just beautiful. And you keep picking them. And, oh, like you said, in the wintertime, having fresh flowers in the house and they just keep giving and giving, and it's just nice.
Yeah. The other thing I've had to do in recent years, because I lost my garden wall space where I used to grow sweet peas, because now the climbing roses and espaliered fruit trees that I've planted have now grown in and taken off and have covered those walls. So what I do now, and this is a good idea for people who have small space gardens or lack of sun, because they do need sun, is you can build teepees out of tall bamboo poles, you know, like 6 foot tall bamboo poles, and just, you know, get three of them, bring them together in a teepee and tie it with twine at the top, and then plant your sweet peas around those poles and let them twine up those poles. And so that way you have the option of putting sweet peas pretty much anywhere in your garden, and it also gives you a tall element in your flower bed, which sometimes is hard for us to get something tall in our flower beds. So that's another idea for sweet peas.
And I think what I'm going to do this year is I have a wrought iron rail that drops between one section of my garden to the other.
Perfect.
And I'm probably going to be planting sweet peas along that rail to give me some color in the wintertime.
Yeah.
And then they're real close to the house. I could snip them off to have flowers in the house.
Yeah, and sweet peas, if you didn't know this, the more you pick them, the more blooms you get. If you let them go to seed without picking them, then the plant thinks that it's done. You know, its life cycle is done, and it will stop blooming. So the moral of the story with sweet peas is pick them, pick them, pick them.
And find places to put them.
Yeah, and give them to friends and take them to work. Yeah, yeah. They don't last long. Each bouquet only lasts for 3 days or so. But, man, while it's in your house, it's smelling up the whole place.
I know when I've gotten a little bouquet of sweet peas, it just is like a little treasure.
It is.
And it just touches my heart. And I see people light up when you give them a little bouquet of sweet peas. It doesn't take much energy to do that.
Yeah.
And it just makes them smile.
It does. Because most people, you know, don't either have the space or the time to grow them. And they're not sold at florists because they're so short-lived. So it is a really special treat when you get one from someone. But let me talk quickly about the other flowers that you can plant. And you can still start cool season flowers and veggies from seed. If you didn't get to it last month in August, you can still plant them from seed. Anything you plant from seed and start indoors or on your patio, it'll take it about 6 weeks generally to be ready to plant in the garden. So if you do it the first half of September, then those seedlings would be ready to plant out in the garden at the end of October, which is a great time to plant things. But if you want to do what I do often and take the lazy man's way out and you have some spaces in your garden, you can just go straight to the nursery, find snapdragons are one of my favorite things, cool season flowers to plant. And my favorite variety, because I do love tall stuff in the garden, is Rocket. A little bit hard to find, but look for Rocket as a variety. Most of the varieties that you find blooming in the nursery are the shorter varieties, and a lot of them are susceptible to rust. Rocket is fairly rust resistant, and also it gets tall. It's like 3 to 4 feet tall, and it is stunning when you see it in the garden. It often won't bloom right away. Depends on when you get it in the ground. That's why if you can get some of these annuals in the ground in September, even though it's hot and you're going to have to water them, you know, fairly frequently, if you can get them to bloom before Christmas, then they'll keep blooming all through the winter. If you get them in later, like in October, and they don't bloom before Christmas, before the weather starts getting cold, then they'll just kind of hang out through the cold weather without blooming. But, you know, it's okay because come, you know, February, they're going to, when the, you know, days start getting longer and hopefully the weather starts warming up a bit, they'll then bloom like crazy for you. So, but just be aware, don't be discouraged if you plant some of these and they don't do a whole lot in the dead of winter. They'll reward you in springtime, you know.
So if you plant it early enough and take care of them, you'll just have a longer bang for your buck.
You do. You have a longer bloom period. So that's the trick. So some of the other ones to try that time of year, calendula, larkspur, stock, one of my other favorites. And my favorite variety there is imperial giant, again, because I'm a sucker for tall plants in the garden, tall flowers in the garden. There are a lot of short varieties of stock, just like short varieties of snapdragons. And that's because, you know, they bloom when they're short. And so those are easy for the nurseries to sell, right? Because it's easier to sell a plant that's in bloom. If you buy the imperial giant stalk and the rocket snapdragon, when you buy those in the nursery, they're not going to be in bloom. They're going to be little green plants.
Now, do you usually find them in the nursery, or do you have to? You usually order them online.
I do not order live plants online. I have ordered the seed and started them from seed online, but some of the better nurseries.
I've had a hard time finding them.
They are hard to find, but you can often ask at places like Rogers if they're going to be getting them, and you can actually give them your name. Green Thumb will do that too. And you can just say, hey, call me when you get rocket snapdragons in. And they usually don't have the rocket snapdragons in single colors, which is kind of sad because, again, I prefer the single colors. But even if it's the mixed colors, sometimes they'll be showing just enough color in the bud that I'll buy a flat of them, and then I'll make my, you know, I'll pick all the yellow ones out and plant those in a place, and I'll pick all the pink ones out and plant those in a place. So you can kind of make your own singles by buying the mixed, enough of the mixed six packs and pulling out the colors for the sections of the garden that you want them in.
Now, my new Tina has a big garden, so if you have a smaller garden, that might not quite work as well. But
if you do a lot of pots, you know, then you can also, you can do that. You know, put the three yellow ones in a pot, or, you know, three pink ones in a pot. You can do that, or share with a friend.
Share with a friend.
Yeah. I could call Katrina up and say, I have too many yellow snapdragons.
I am ready.
Come get them.
I'm ready to plant now. I'm so excited. Yeah. Hey, we need to take a quick break and let everybody know that the opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, go to kuci.org. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. Well, Tina, you got me thinking about planting. I am so excited.
I know, me too. I want to
leave here and go clean out my garden right now.
Get rid of the ugly stuff. Before we leave the flowering stuff, just a quick word on roses. You know, if you take care of your roses in August and September, you often will have roses blooming at the holidays, which is pretty fun, especially if you're going to send pictures to your family back east, you know, who doesn't have anything blooming, right?
Christmas roses, right?
Yeah, exactly. So your roses might be looking a little, I know mine are looking a little bad. They've, you know, got rust or powdery mildew, or they've been eaten by, you know, assorted insects. And so I give them a little in August and early September. I don't prune them per se, but I give them kind of an aggressive deadheading, you know, to cut off some of those long stems when the bloom is done. Cut them back a little bit far so that you can get rid of some of those leaves that have a lot of damage and the lankiness. And then I don't feed them super heavy in September, but in early September, a little bit of liquid, you know, fertilizer, a light feeding. I like to use a little fish emulsion, or you can use, you know, if you don't mind using the synthetic fertilizers, you can use those as
well.
Now,
why do you do the light fertilizer, or liquid, I should say?
That's a good question. The liquid fertilizer acts more quickly than the granular fertilizer. So the granular fertilizer lasts longer in your garden, and it's going to be encouraging longer growth. Remember what we do in December and January to roses.
We cut them down.
We prune them, right? So do we want a lot of growth to be continuing on through December? No, we want our roses to be slowing down in December and January. It's California. They're not going to go dormant. Sometimes it kills me that I have to prune my iceberg roses in January, and they're still blooming.
I have been over here in January, and her front yard is just in bright white with the flowers growing, the roses growing, and I'm like, she doesn't have a month where she can cut them back.
I'm finally just saying, too bad, guys, you're getting your hair cut this month. But if you fertilize with a granular fertilizer, you know, full strength in September, that's going to encourage them to, you know, continue to bloom. So do that if you want to try and, you know, keep them blooming because you have a January wedding or something that you're hosting. But in general, most of us are going to be ready to prune our roses in January. So a light feeding in September, which will get you some blooms in, you know, Thanksgiving time and maybe into December, is what I generally like to do for roses. So I think we should move on from the flower garden, right?
Flower garden.
Because our veggie gardens are at the same transition time.
It's transition time. Time to clean up and get ready and weed out. And here we go. Where do you want to start?
Well, let's just say that in September, that's sometimes one of the most productive months for the summer veggies. So your peppers may be going gangbusters. You may still have tomato plants that are going gangbusters. Your squash might still be going gangbusters, especially if you planted pumpkins, you know, that you're not going to want to harvest until October for our Halloween, you know, type decorations. So what happens in September in your veggie garden depends on what you've still got producing, because obviously, you know, we're going to want to eat that food for as long as we can.
We have some things that are going so nicely.
But on the other hand, if like in my garden, your squash plants, your zucchini plants are so full of powdery mildew that you just can't take it anymore, and you're so sick of eating zucchini, and you know, your neighbors, you know, are hiding when they see you walk down the street because they don't want you to bring them any more zucchini, yank that zucchini plant out, right? It's probably taken over a good chunk of the veggie garden anyway. And so yank it out, and now you'll have a wonderful spot to direct sow some lettuces, some spinach, some kale, all of those green leafy veggies that we want to plant in our cool season garden.
You know, a lot of people think that you have to pull everything out to start your garden, but you really don't. You know, we leave things going, and the corn is done. It's been done for a couple weeks now, and we have this big plot where we had this wonderful corn this summer, and that's gone. But our tomatoes are still going, and some of our other peppers are still going, and we're just cleaning around what we have and making room for new stuff. And eventually, we don't want to give up on the stuff that's really reducing, and I still like my zucchinis. I have made zucchinis, curry zucchini soup, and zucchini chips, and grilled zucchini and sauteed zucchini.
I think
zucchini.
I want that curried zucchini soup recipe. That sounds yummy.
It is incredible.
Yeah,
I will give
email
to
me
you.
That.
I will email it to you. It is the best recipe in the whole world. Everybody loves that. And it's cold for night. It's cold curried zucchini soup for a hot day.
Oh, wow.
It's wonderful. But anyways, there's this time to go in and start cleaning up. And, you know, things are dying and looking yucky, and you want to get those dead plants out there anyways.
Right. So as you get space, as your summer veggies are done, go ahead and till that soil. Mix in some new compost, some new organic fertilizer, and start planting your cool season crops, which are any of the lettuce leafy crops, anything in the kale family, the cabbage family, which means broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, the cabbages, any of those are cool season. Any of the root vegetables, so your carrots, your beets. We generally wait for onions till a little bit later.
Usually beginning of January, I buy the little starts.
Yeah, or you can plant from seed in November-ish, but you got to make sure you plant the short, what are called short day onions, but we'll talk more about that in our October show. But green onions you can plant now, I try to have green onions all year just because it's nice and handy to have in the garden. And then peas. We talked about sweet peas, the edible peas, same exact kind of story with those. You can start planting them. And actually, I do several crops of the peas. So I'll plant a crop in early September if I've got a spot for them. And then 4 weeks later, I'll plant another crop. And then 4 weeks later, I'll plant another crop. So I do 4 or 5 feet, you know, of a row up a trellis. And again, just like the sweet peas, most varieties, or not most, but a lot of the varieties of the peas grow tall. So you want to have some tall trellises, like 6 foot tall trellises. But there are bush varieties of peas. I actually find that they do better with a short trellis anyway. I kind of like to even grow those 2 foot tall bush varieties up against a little trellising system so that they're not laying on the ground. They're a little easier for me to control in my raised beds if they're up against a little trellis.
You know what else we've done over the years is we've changed a little bit how we plant, and this is a personal choice. We probably eat solely out of our garden at least 10 months a year, sometimes longer than that.
Wow.
And we can, but what we do is we don't plant everything at once. We plant kind of, we have a kind of a 2 week because you can't eat 12 heads of broccoli in one day or 12 cabbages. And so we plant smaller amounts, but we just keep planting it. So we'll have a continuous food source throughout the winter or throughout the summer or throughout the year. And so you don't, what's nice about transitioning, even though you haven't taken everything out, it doesn't mean you need to plant 12 heads of cabbage. You know, you got a little bit of room, plant a head or two, you know, or three or something like that.
Yeah.
Plant smaller amounts and then just keep planting to for your family needs.
Right.
And that has really changed. We used to get these bumper crops of vegetables and like, how much can two people eat? I mean, how many heads of cabbage can you and your husband eat? But if we have it coming every other week, we have plenty for our food source, and then we also have room in the garden to keep planting, because now by the time one's done, we have this rotation system. We just start all over again, and we just keep it going. So I know I get really excited. I used to get really excited and want to plant everything as soon as I could, but slowing it down a little bit gives you a little bit more gives you more production later in an even production.
Absolutely. Especially with, you know, some of the root vegetables that take a little bit longer to mature. You know, if you only plant one crop of carrots, all your carrots are going to come, you know, ready to harvest at one time, and you're not going to be able to eat that many carrots.
I tell
once.
You, when I got 12 heads of cabbage.
Yeah, there you go. We make sauerkraut.
We did. My husband brought it up. I spent an afternoon making sauerkraut, which was wonderful. It's a great fermentation. It's a great thing to do, and it's good for your gut. But after having 12 heads of cabbage at one time, I went, maybe one or two might be better.
Yeah, or at least only a six-pack. And speaking of six packs versus seeds, the things that you want to plant from seeds are right now in September are the things that are easy to germinate, like direct sow right in your garden while the soil is warm. They'll germinate so quickly. And again, those would be the lettuces and the green leafy crops, as well as the peas and the root veggies. If you want to plant, as Katrina was saying, the cabbages or the broccoli or the cauliflower, those things are best planted either in six packs that you start, you know, out on a warm counter, or indoors if you want to start them indoors, and then transplant it into the garden about 6 weeks later. Or alternatively, you can buy six packs, obviously already started at the nursery. So those are two strategies.
And it really depends on what you want to do and how much time you have. You know, sometimes we all get busy and it's just easy to run out and grab a six pack and plant.
Yeah, and it depends on what varieties you want too. Now, sometimes if you have a special variety, like if you want to grow, you know, the orange cauliflower or the purple cauliflower and you can't find that at a nursery, then you might want to, you know, grow them from seed. But if you just want plain old broccoli, you're going to be able to find plain old six packs of broccoli, you know, kind of anywhere. So I wouldn't worry about that. But I do love ordering all the different varieties of lettuces. You know, you can get, you know, just some really fun, you know, freckled kind of varieties. I like the little gem Caesar, you know, for Caesar salad, the little gem romaine, which is kind of fun for a small garden because the heads don't get as big as the regular romaine. But, you know, the nurseries have gotten so good. I even found little gem last winter. One of the nurseries had six packs of little gem. I went, oh my gosh, I didn't need to buy seeds. But, you know, it's hit or miss. You don't know what you're going to find. So if you have a variety that you're especially wanting to try, the seeds are pretty fun.
You know, and it depends on how much energy you want to put into it.
Yeah.
So there's something for all levels of whatever you want to do. It's just the big thing is go out and do it.
Right. And just a note on starting seeds. When you're starting seeds in September, remember the days are hot and we're probably going to get Santa Ana winds at some point. And if you have just planted seeds, you do need to remember to water them sometimes twice a day.
Yes.
Because if they dry out, they won't germinate at all. So just be aware, if you're going to plant seeds, like I'm going to be on a little trip in September and I won't be planting any seeds until after I get back from the trip, because I don't want to risk them not germinating while I'm gone. So yeah, I think that anything else, Katrina, you can think about veggies that you want to mention?
No, just go out and clean up your garden. You know,
yeah.
If you even don't have time to plant, go out and clean it up.
Right.
You know, get rid of the dead stuff so you could be, when you have time and energy and you're going to be back from vacation, it'll be ready to go.
Right. A couple other things we should talk about in regards to planting, though, and that's we'll talk about perennials because fall is the time to plant perennials. Fabulous time. And if you're a new gardener and you want to understand exactly what we're talking about when we say perennials, perennials are plants that last from year to year. They're not plants that are done in one season. And so there are perennial flowering plants like Shasta daisies and daylilies, and so many, many others, chrysanthemums, you know, just so many perennials. And fall is a really good time to plant these because the soil is still warm. And when you put those plants in that nice warm soil, they settle in without any transplant shock, as long as you're watering them during the hot weather. And then in the winter, they probably won't do enough. You know, you'll see their greenery and they'll just kind of hang out. But when springtime comes, because they've had all winter to settle in, they will just go and bloom and grow like gangbusters.
And when you say settle in, you're talking about the roots be able to take hold and grow. So maybe not what you're seeing above the ground is what's going on below the ground, but there's a lot growing on below the ground. If they have that nice warm earth to grow and get comfortable, and then when the cold weather comes, they don't grow as much, but then they're ready to take off.
You're absolutely right. Settling in isn't the best terminology, but what Katrina says is absolutely right. You may not see a whole lot going on above ground, but those roots are getting themselves settled so that when the warm weather and the springtime weather comes, those roots are completely settled in. They're able to gather nutrients and water, and you'll see this explosion of growth and bloom from perennials that you plant in the fall. Now, oftentimes we see them in the nurseries in the springtime as well, because that's when they're blooming, and the nurseries always want to sell things when they're blooming, right? Because that's when customers get excited. And so you can still plant perennials in the spring, but if you can find them in the fall, you'll find that the ones you plant in the fall will outperform the ones you plant in early spring, because those poor ones you plant in early spring are trying to bloom and get their roots settled at the same time. So, of course, that's a lot of stress on the plant. So if you have room in your garden and you can find some perennials that you've always wanted to try, for sure plant them in the fall.
There's lots to do.
Yeah. And then even more, if you're going to switch to some drought-tolerant, California-friendly landscaping, of course, September is the time when you want to start planning that. You probably want to wait till the second half of October to start planting when it's a little bit less hot, but you want to plant those in October, November, December, January, February, and so September is a great time to start planning, you know, where you're going to do it, what your irrigation is going to be like, because remember, those plants are going to need a different type of watering perhaps than your previous traditional gardening. If you're going to do a big area, you might want to hire a landscape designer who specializes in that type of landscaping. So September is a great time to get organized for that.
You know, it's investment now for future gain. A lot of times people just get excited and they plant. But it gets expensive because sometimes we don't plan it and do it the right way. But if we take time to figure it out and maybe draw it out what you want, or contact a specialist, say this is what I want, and do it right the first time, you're going to save a lot as far as frustration, as time, as energy, money, and just take time to figure it out.
Yeah, and the other thing to note, Katrina and I have both seen some really well done, beautiful, drought-tolerant, California-friendly, whatever you want to call them, gardens. So beautiful and lush that they almost look like English gardens, right? They have
stunning
blooms that happen at different times of the year. They have grasses that give a lush look that don't take a lot of water. Tall grasses that have these beautiful seed heads that give motion and food and habitat to birds and wildlife. But we've also seen ones where, you know, the folks are perhaps not real knowledgeable about these plants and, you know, go to a nursery center and just, you know, pick assorted things and plant them. And if there isn't a little bit of thought put behind, you know, how to arrange these plants and how to group them, it can look like a hodgepodge, you know, and not real attractive and a little bare, you know, because if you don't understand what the habit of that plant is. You know, some of these grasses are, you know, they're warm season grasses. So in the winter, they're dormant and they're not doing much. So if you've filled up, you know, that entire garden with these grasses that are all dormant in the winter, you're not going to have much to look at and perhaps not be very happy with that.
And some of these plants don't do a lot in the summer.
So that's the other thing.
We do a lot of entertaining outside in the summer, and if everything's kind of looking dry and dead, that's not really that great either.
Right. And so this is one of those times where it might pay you to, in the long run, hire a designer to just do the layout. You know, maybe you want to install it yourself, but at least if they can identify the plants for you and have some things like sages that are going to be blooming in the summertime so that you don't have this totally dead looking garden in the summer. And, you know, maybe some grasses that are happier in the summer than they are in the winter, or maybe some that are happy in the summer and some that are happy in winter, so that you have interest and balance. So I know I've heard from some people who've done this big switch to thought they were being so responsible and switching to their California friendly garden, and then they're not real happy with the outcome, but it's because they didn't understand the plants and they didn't have, you know, somebody who knew what they were doing helping them. So,
and I think that's one of the reasons why we're talking about September is a good time to look. You know, there's places you can look on the internet. There's a lot of different things on the internet. There's classes you can go to. Garden centers are doing it. I think Irvine Water District is offering classes. Go and check it out, because it's a big commitment to switch over.
And all the water districts whose websites I've visited have either on their own website, or they have links to other websites that give you tips on what plants to choose, and even some design tips, and even some sample palettes, you know, plant palettes for redoing your garden. So lots of information out there. And then we're also very lucky in that we have a premier grower down here in San Juan Capistrano, Tree of Life Nursery, that also has a lot of classes. And they, of course, really ramp that up in the fall because they know people are going to be wanting to do a lot of planting then.
It's time to do it.
Yeah, so check that out. And mostly work with knowledgeable people. Even if you don't hire a designer, you know, work at nurseries that have knowledgeable people who can, you know, give you some advice on what plants to choose.
Or if you're doing this yourself, you can start small. You don't have to do your whole yard. Do one watering section at a time.
There you go.
You know, you want to keep your drought tolerance with your drought tolerance. And so find money is an issue and we were trying to keep it low cost. Look at one section of your yard that the sprinkler system goes off at, a watering system goes off at, and then just maybe decide for that one section, and that's your project for the winter.
Right.
You know, it's better to get one section done and do it right than try to do everything and kind of make a mess of it.
There you go.
Trust me, I know. Yeah. We all get so excited, but, you know, there's something right out there for everybody.
Yeah, yeah. How much time do we have left?
We have about five minutes.
You know, one thing I thought of that I didn't mention, we talked about fertilizer for roses and said that we, you know, should... That I personally just like to give them a liquid fertilizer in September, so that they have a chance to calm down and go into their whatever dormancy they go into. Another class of plants that you don't want to fertilize anymore is your citrus. So if you fertilize your citrus in the fall, it will put out new growth. And we do get frost here in Orange County occasionally, and it's the new growth that is really susceptible to the frost. If you grew up here back when there were orange groves, like Katrina and I did, you might remember that the citrus groves had those smokers. Do you remember those things?
Yeah.
And so they would light those because that would heat up the, you know, the orchard and keep the frost from damaging the citrus trees. So just do remember that even though we don't get frequent frosts, you don't want to have a lot of new growth on your citrus trees in the wintertime. So don't fertilize them from here on out until we get to February. You want to just leave your citrus to just hang out. You can mulch them, you know, and let the natural rain, you know, percolate through that mulch, which will give them, you know, a gentle light feeding. But you don't want to be feeding them with, you know, active, you know, fertilizers this time of year. So just want to, and it's the same true for any tropical plant. So the same with your bougainvillea or any other tropical plants you might have in your yard. Don't fertilize them heavily in the fall, because you don't want to encourage them to have a lot of brand new growth that then gets zapped come late December or January.
You know, Tina, I want to segue just for a minute.
Sure.
Just completely forgot about this. We just got our trees trimmed.
Oh, yeah. We didn't talk about
that. We did an interview. One of our DJs, Dave Laterna, did an interview with how to protect defensible spaces for gardens.
Yeah.
And he did that recently, and I was down with him with the fire authority. And there's a lot of kindling in our mountains and our hills here and around. And I live right abut against the hills. And so what we did is we had some of our bigger trees more pruned back, just cleaned up, and just getting ready for the Santa Ana winds.
Good point.
So, you know, and you might not be in a fire area, but you could be having trees that just, you don't want the limbs to break off. You don't want, you know, there's just a lot of reasons to, you know, find a good arborist, find somebody. And now's a really good time. I'd say do it sooner than later, because as soon as we get our first big winds, everybody's going to call and want an arborist to trim their trees.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
The price changes after the first big winds. Trust me, I know that. And so that's something you might think about doing if you have some trees on your property. Right now, you know, think about if they could use some trimming up.
Absolutely.
And, you know, for fire, for danger, for dropping, just a lot of reasons. And a good pruning, you know, some of those big things we just can't do ourselves.
Yes. And it's... A tree is a huge investment, so sometimes that's money that's wisely spent rather than have you make a pruning cut that's going to damage the tree or make it look bad.
Yeah, and some of us have really large trees, you know, and they do need to be taken care of also.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, just way past my pay grade.
Yeah, no. And my age.
And my
no
age.
No more tree climbing for me.
I got this 60-foot tree, and I'm like, oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, only the professionals should attack that one.
Well, I think we're just about there. Any last words?
No, just have a great time planning your cool season garden. Get out there in September and October, because we all know what November and December are like. We get busy with the holidays. So September and October are our great months in the fall to get out in our garden and clean up and get a fresh start.
Investment now for a future gain.
Yeah.
If you do it now, we'll have some nice stuff for the holidays and for the spring, and then you'll have time to play in November and December.
Absolutely.
All righty. Well, I think we're at our time, Tina. As always, thank you so much. And we'll be talking to you guys next week, and we hope you all have a wonderful week.